Okay. And now, before we begin the discussion, I want to go over some of the ground rules as to how we operate the these town hall meetings. I'm going to put it into lecture mode. After I finish speaking, if you have any questions or comments in regards to something that I'm discussing, or you bring in anything to the floor, you can press *6 on your phone. That will allow you to go into the queue, and and then I can address what you're saying. So just give me a moment here and let me go over these rules. Okay, so for all the new callers, my name is Brother Lou, just in case anyone doesn't know. And I want to welcome you all to another Black Wallace meeting, another Black Wallace Matter town hall meeting. Tonight I am feeling empowered and productive. We've made a little progress. We had a few things that we wanted to get accomplished with the organization, and things are moving forward. So I'm feeling really grateful and inspired by that. If you notice, when you called in, I addressed you as either brother or sister, and the reason we do that is to foster solidarity and to show respect to one another. So some of you guys probably remember how it was back in the 70s. You know, you would greet a brother or sister, you'd say, "Hey, brother, hey, sister," nod your head, and, you know, then we had that community vibe. That's what we're trying to bring back here. During these calls, we do not discuss religion. We do not discuss the black male and female dynamic, and we do not discuss political party affiliation. The reason we do not discuss these topics is because they are opinion-based, and we will be going around and around in a circle, and no one will be right, and no one will be wrong. How it relates to us as black people, and how we can use it for the betterment of our situation or to improve our situation. But we don't want to get into which party did this and which party did not do that. For the guests on the call, really briefly, I want to give you a little bit of background on this organization. So if you haven't watched the blueprint yet, Black Wallets Matter is a member association comprised of brothers and sisters that believe the only way we're going to fix the problems in the black community is if we do it ourselves and if we start using the power of the black dollars we already have. It's estimated we spent $1.3 trillion last year. So if we were to pool our resources and practice group economics, we could have a major financial impact and transform our community. The purpose of this member association is to bring together like-minded brothers and sisters who are sick and tired of the sad state of affairs in the black community and are motivated to take action. So this is what the overall goal is of this organization. First thing you got to understand is that we have the problems that we face, they are systematic. So the oppression, the injustice, all these different things, it is ingrained in the American way of doing the American system of doing business. And we are being disenfranchised by that system. So the way that we're going to solve those problems is if we implement our own system. We have to implement our own system of countermeasures. And so the overall goal of this organization is to really create change economically, politically, and socially. I am determined not to be like any other type of organization, or I am determined not to have this organization wind up like any other, like some of the other organizations out there, where they're just getting together, they're having a bunch of meetings, and then there's no real progress. We have a very realistic plan that will impact future generations of black Americans or just black people around the world. But it, you know, our goal is to start here in America. It will take a generation or two to achieve the goal that we have set, and it will require a sacrifice from those of us who can do for those who can't. So basically what the goal is to change the perception and the mindset and the culture of black people going forward in the future. Now, we all know that's a very, very big job, and it's not going to happen with pretty much the people that are, you know, people who are alive now or who have their minds made up now, right? We're not going to change anyone's mind. They're going to have to make that determination on their own. Many of you have tried to speak to some of our brothers and sisters, and I'm sure, you know, your pleas and the things that you're saying has fallen on deaf ears. That's because the way that the system is set up now, we are conditioned to, for lack of a better word, man, I think it's self-hate. That's like one of the traits, that one of the effects that we have from slavery. And man, I'm really convinced that this thing is real. So it's going to take a sacrifice from a generation or two of us. And what we plan on doing is basically redefining the culture for the babies. And that means it's starting with the children who are most at risk in impoverished, lower income areas, because those are the children who grow up to be, you know, wind up going to prison or wind up committing this violence or whatever it is. And that gives the system, the way the system is set up, that causes that, you know, allows them to keep marginalizing us. One of the biggest effects on us is the lack of black fathers in the home. You know, that happens with, I mean, they targeted us with the war on drugs. Then they started with the mass incarceration and all those different things. So basically what they're doing, they're taking the black man away from the black woman and the black child. And then so that child is growing up, and if he's a male, he's repeating the cycle that's going to probably wind up the same like his father. And if it's a young girl in that house, she's growing up without the balance of a mother or a father. Many of our women, they're overburdened. They're raising children a lot of times on their own. And when she's focused on, you know, putting clothes on their back and food on the table, she really doesn't have the strength, the energy, and the resources to start applying into some of the other things like building wealth and leaving, you know, building a legacy and doing all that other stuff. She's just worried about surviving. So the ultimate goal of this organization is to change that. And that means that we will probably have to start subsidizing these kids, and that's through our community resource centers. It's going to take billions of dollars to do this. It's a big job. I am not, you know, delusional about what it's going to take. It's going to take billions of dollars. The other thing, once these children start growing up and their mindset starts changing, and then they start becoming productive, because the system is the way that it is, because America is the way that it is, these children are going to need protections, right? So they're no longer going to be the knuckleheads walking around with saggy pants and getting in trouble. These are going to be productive young men and women, and they need the different types of opportunities and protections that we can give them. And so the other component of this organization is to gain political influence in Washington through lawyers and lobbyists, basically to set up advocates. So that way, when something happens to black people, same way like how it does in one of these Jewish communities, and they have their watchdogs that condemn them, slam them, sue them, do all this crazy stuff, that's essentially what we're going to need for these children. That, too, will cost tens of millions of dollars every year. So if you add the tens of millions with the possibly tens of billions, you can see we are going to need a lot of money to set these things up. These things will not bring a return on investment. I'm just letting you know. So if you look at, if anyone studies the Jewish community, they put money into their way of life to protect their way of life. It is a sunk cost. That is essentially what it is. This is we're Jewish, and this $15, $25, $50 a month or however it is, because they actually pay the money to their synagogues, however much money they're paying, they are paying that to ensure that future generations of Jewish people will first of all never experience what they experienced before with the Holocaust, and then that they, you know, that they are able to maintain the advantages, the economic advantages that they have fought so hard to implement. So this is the first time that I'm actually explaining it this way to everyone. And so we have some members on the call. We have some new people. That is what the ultimate goal of this organization is about. And like I said, that's a generation or two. So we're talking about 20, 40 years, right? It starts with now the way that we're going to generate these billions of dollars is through business. That's the only way it could, because the money needs to be sustainable. So other ethnic groups have already proven that these models work, and so we are just going to copy them, basically. Black people need to learn how to set their differences aside and focus on the overall goal. We need to stop getting so emotional about things when we hear things that are true and if it offends us. We just need to just accept that that's what it is and use it as a way to grow. And most importantly, we need to learn how to disagree with one another without burning the house down and abandoning the overall plan. So last week what I did was I asked, you know, people, you know, if they agree with that, to press *6 and things like that, you know, just to show me that they agree. But we're not going to do that this week. We're just going to move forward. So now that I told you what the overall goal is, that is what we can accomplish as a group of like-minded brothers and sisters. So remember, so if you're a person who does not feel that you can make a sacrifice for the future generations, that may be your children, your grandchildren, or your great-grandchildren, then this organization is not for you, because that's what it's going to take. It's not going to take anything else. It's not going to be any tricks. It's not going to be any scams. It's not going to be easy. It's going to take hard work and dedication for us, and we may not even actually see the fruits of it. So we need to implement this system, and maybe at the end of our days when we're able to see, let's say if we chose a place like Detroit or Atlanta or Charlotte or whatever, and we see the beginnings, the machinations of, I mean, the implementation of the mechanics of how the system is working, that may be all that we're going to see, and we're going to have to go leave this earth happy knowing that the wheels are turning, because once the ball gets rolling, it won't stop. So when we say our black wallets matter, that's essentially what we're talking about. It doesn't necessarily, in all cases, it doesn't necessarily mean we have to spend either. So we can withhold our money from people who do, or businesses and entities that do not respect our patronage or have our best interests in mind. We are the biggest spenders in the American economy. And you can believe if we united and boycotted a certain business, we could have a major impact on the U.S. economy. And realistically, that's the kind of action that we need to take. Right now, there's that boycott the NFL thing going around. I'm not really a big football fan or whatever, but you know what? I think that we need to just pick something, because this dude, Colin Kaepernick, however you pronounce his name, Cap, he took a knee. He stood up for all of us before anybody did anything, and he had a very, very big platform. He knew what he knew that he was able to create this type of impact. So when all this situation was happening with Michael Brown and Eric Garner and all these other different things, right, people on the opposing side, all they were doing, they were marching and protesting, and then the way people received it, it was negative. This brother just was like, all right, cool, I'm just going to use my platform to protest and give a voice to those who don't normally have a voice. If for no other reason, I feel that we should stand behind him. We need to stand behind somebody. So that's one of the things that, you know, that's one of the things that I feel. You can take it however you want. So let's see here. So America understands economics. And so that's also another reason to boycott, because if we're able to show them that we're able to affect their money and that we're organized enough to affect their money, that will definitely make them wake up, and that will afford us the protections that we need for these children, because they would be willing to come to the bargaining table. So like I said, this organization is really about making things happen. We don't want to just talk about it. We want to be about it. Everyone has their own ideas about how to solve problems in the black community because there are a million different types of problems. But this organization, we are focused on our priorities on these three issues. That is the black poverty, which affects over 70% of the single black mothers. And that's for the reason that I told you, because of the destruction of the black core family, the core black family. Black unemployment, which affects black people, which affects 50% of the black population as compared to 9% to the whites. And again, it's also for that reason, right? So we want to be able to help more of our brothers and sisters provide loving and nurturing home environments for their children. And then this wave of racially motivated police brutality, that is a big problem as well. And obviously, because we don't want the cops going upside our heads without any repercussions. So, as I said, the way that we plan on addressing these issues is through this member association. We collect membership dues. We are not a nonprofit organization. We will be structured as a benefit corporation. Benefit corporate, that's a B Corp, right? So you've probably heard of LLCs, Cs, and S Corps. This is a B Corp, which is a benefit corporation. Benefit corporations are businesses that exist for the sole purpose of serving a particular group of people. So Black Wallets Matter exists for the sole purpose of conducting business to help the black community. We are not an investor group. There's a ton of regulations governing those types of entities, and we don't need red tape or bureaucracy to do the things that we want. So we want to try to move as lean and agile as we can. Membership start at $10 at the silver level, $25 at the gold, and $50 at the platinum level. Our goal within the next 3 to 5 years is to get 1 million association members. And so let me just do some quick math for you. So with 1 million association members, we could generate over $300 million a year in revenue. With that kind of revenue, we can get a $1 or $2 billion loan. So at the onset, I said that it's going to take billions to do the things that we are looking to do. This is the plan to do it. So this is why this is not like a pie in the sky type dream. We've done the math and we can get there. With that kind of money, we could buy large scale businesses such as manufacturing plants, supermarket chains, franchise chains, and we can employ hundreds and possibly even thousands of our brothers and sisters. With the profits from these businesses we can build those community resource centers that we're talking about, where the children have a safe place to go and where they can learn, we can redefine what it means to be black. We can give them a cultural shift. So we can teach them things like black people don't kill each other, black people help each other out, you know, whatever, stuff like that. Anything that counteracts the measures, counteracts what we have going on right now. In addition to that, in the community resource centers, we will also provide jobs and trades training, skilled trades. So like plumbing and electricity, electrician, welding, things like that. We have some brothers who are in the transportation industry. They were talking about how we could start implementing, helping people get their CDLs and become truck drivers and things like that. So in addition to nurturing the children, we also want to be able to help, you know, struggling mothers and fathers be able to earn a decent wage if they don't want to work for the jobs that we have. Then we have the lawyers and the lobbyists. The other portion of the profits from these businesses would go towards hiring the lawyers and the lobbyists to protect and enforce our civil rights. We have laws that are already on the books. We have the Enforcement Act of 1870, Section 2, Section 18, or something like that. It already exists. It says it is to protect people of color from law enforcement. So they had this problem back in the days where the cops were going upside people's heads, chilling them, things like that. And there was laws put on the books to protect us specifically. Now it's gotten buried. It was actually used successfully to prosecute a sheriff somewhere in the South. It was actually used successfully, but again, you know, through time and manipulation and political wrangling, they sort of buried it, but it still exists. And if we were able to allocate the money, we could definitely use it to protect our civil rights. Also, the Jewish community used a lot of the laws that were put on the books, well, the Jews and the LGBT community, they use a lot of laws that were put on the books for us. They use that to protect and enforce their rights. So, you know, a lot of the changes that's going on in the world where you can't say certain things, like I don't even think you can say gay or something like that, something like some of these things you can't say anymore. And it's because they have used laws that were put on the books for us. So this stuff is definitely doable, folks. So now these are obviously lofty goals, and like I said, it's going to take years of hard work and sacrifice. So to get the ball rolling, we have set an immediate goal of 2,000 founding members for the end of this year. What we want to do with these 2,000 founding members is we want to start creating, I call them proof elements, to show to the rest of the Black community. So most of you guys know, many of our brothers and sisters, they don't care about anything unless they're able to see it, touch it, smell it, whatever it is. And so we want to start creating these entities and programs and putting things in place for them to actually see, touch, smell, feel, whatever. It will also show them how a group of unrelated Black people from all across the country came together to create something of benefit for all of us. It's a very selfless act, and it basically tells our brothers and sisters that we love them even without actually knowing them. So it's letting them know that, hey, listen, you know, we're uniting. We mean what we say. We are doing what we say, and, you know, you're welcome to join us. We welcome you with open arms. This will raise the visibility of the organization and create a snowball effect where more of our brothers and sisters will want to join us and help us build out the next phase of our plan. So these proof elements that I speak of will be businesses. The first business, so if you've been on a call, then you know about the Black Wall Street Project. Our first business was going to be a shopping portal, but we have set our sights on something a little bit, an interim business, something a little bit more immediate, and it's basically to help a lot of Black-owned business owners help them promote their business, grow their business. There are people who you know, they are struggling. They want to earn additional income. They you know, it's a lot of different things that surrounding Black wealth, basically. And so we are going to create the Black Wall Street Project. The Black Wall Street Project will help those brothers and sisters with their businesses, help them get more visibility, promotion, because this organization, we do have a pretty wide reach. So, you know, on a weekly basis, we probably reach anywhere from 3 to 7 million people on Facebook. We have thousands of people coming to the website every day. So we want to promote some of these businesses. So like I said, so some of the members, they know I've been talking about this for weeks. It's probably about a month and a half or 2 months now. But I am happy to announce that we have one of the phases of the Black Wall Street Project. It is live. So we have the Black Wall Street Business Directory. So if you are a Black business owner, then you can promote your business. If you are a member, that is available to you free. You can just send me an email, and we will get your business posted there. For other people who are contemplating becoming members or thinking of, you know, what could I benefit from this? If you have a business and you want some more exposure, visibility, you become a member today, then that will be available to you. We were going to make it only available for members at the gold and platinum level, but we are going to open it up to members at all levels, because we've had a lot of brothers and sisters who have stood behind us during these growing and changing processes, growing pains, and they've stuck with us, and so they deserve to reap some benefits for that. So let's talk about the membership dues and how the money is managed. So I think we're we have the numbers change every day because we have members coming in, members leaving, but we're at like a little less than 300 members. So we do not meet the current revenue requirements to be a certified B Corp. This organization, I am subsidizing this organization out of my pocket every month. I post the amount of money that the organization spends and the amount of money that the organization takes in. So for those who are concerned with how the membership dues are being managed and what's going on with the money, right now there is no money to do any funny business with. So, you know, anyone that's coming on board or anyone that's thinking about becoming a member, basically what you would be doing is helping us close that gap for just to operate this organization and help us, you know, get the word out and get more new brothers and sisters aware of what's going on and coming on to town hall meetings or coming to check out what we're about. You know, so like I said, some of you guys, guests, you know, this is your first call. This is how we constantly promote to get new people on the calls. This is how we constantly promote to get new people, you know, to watch the blueprint or to come, you know, to a town hall or check us out on Facebook. So like I said, I've made the investment. I've made the personal investment into the Black Wall Street Project. I am investing in the Black Wall Street Project. So again, you know, if you're saying like, well, how are we going to get from point A to point B? I have dedicated myself to seeing these things come to fruition. So that is pretty much where we are. We started back in March from zero, and now we're at like, I want to say 44,000 followers or whatever it is on Facebook, and we have like 8,500 people on the email list and, you know, all of those types of things. So we are definitely growing. We're not growing as fast as I thought we would have, but we are making progress. We are moving forward. So that pretty much sums up what this organization is about. I am going to put the call into Q&A mode. And again, like I said, if you have any questions in regards to that, then you can press *6. On your phone, and if you have no other, and you know, if no one has any questions, or once I finish asking questions, then we can have an open discussion and bring some things to the floor. Just let me put it in Q&A mode. Okay. So, you know, if you are thinking about this organization, I want to personally invite everyone on the call to become a member today. Because again, like I said, there's, you know, if you're not a member. So like I said, realistically speaking, nothing is going to be able to happen unless we start putting our money where our mouth is. I mean, whatever, we like to discuss solutions to different problems. Nothing is going to happen. Nothing is going to happen until somebody says, okay, you know what? Here's the money, or here's the credit card, or whatever it is to go press up some flyers or whatever. So, Sister Debbie, you're in the queue. Peace, sister. Hello? Sister Debbie? Hello, sister? She pressed *6. I don't know what happened.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was on mute.
Oh, okay.
Hi. Okay, peace. I have a question. There are other movements that yours is the one that I think that's really got, you know, kind of got legs. A lot of other movements, they really are good, but, you know, there really isn't a plan to move. So I was wondering if you were looking to maybe partner with some of them. Like, for example, the Harvest Institute with Dr. Claude Anderson. I'm just using that as an example. Have you thought about something like that?
Yes. So each week someone mentions this, someone says that, says, hey, you know, what about partnering with another group? And we do not personally know anyone at any of these organizations, but I have reached out to I have reached out to some people, and we have not really been able to come to like a meeting of the minds, because their focus is, you know, sometimes their focus is a little bit different than ours. So that's pretty much what has happened. You know, we get a lot of people, that's why I said black people need to learn how to work together and, you know, settle their differences or realize that the overall goal is one thing. So that's what it is. But if you have a connection with one of these other organizations, then by all means, we would love to work with them.
Yeah, I think that'll be a great idea. I mean, you don't have to be 100%, but, you know, I mean, it's for the common cause. So I just thought I'd bring that up. Thanks for taking my call.
Okay. And, okay, so no one else has any questions. If anyone else has any questions or comments, then you can press *6. And if not, we're going to open the floor up. We'll have an open discussion. Okay. Sister Shamika, Brother Ed, and Brother Al. Okay, Sister Shamika.
Hi, Brother Lou. Hi, everyone. This is Shamika from Atlanta. Not really a question, but just responding back to Sister Debbie. And Brother Lou, we still have to have our come to Jesus and our talk or whatever, so I just want to remind you of that. But anyway, we are here in Atlanta. We are trying to do the same thing. I'm supporting Brother Lou, and I tell everybody to support him because at the end of the day, the greater cause is for us to get to where we need to be. And that is financially and economically independent, just like other races are. Every species on this planet works together except for us. That's a huge statement in itself, every species, all the way from animals. So we're here doing the same thing in Atlanta, but we're supporting Brother Lou in this movement because it's the greater cause. But at the same time, these, you know, economic empowerment, it needs to happen all over the country. So we're still doing it here because we want to have our economic center right here in Atlanta. So we're looking at this as a dual thing. And the only thing that I say about these other institutions, I mean, from a Dr. Claude Anderson, I think everybody is, you know, piggybacking off of his knowledge and what he's taught us to start these movements. I know that there's something going on in New Orleans and everywhere. I just think that everybody just has to get the movement going. And then once everybody reaches a pinnacle or whatever, it's going to be a tipping point where we all recognize, hey, we're here, we're doing it, and we'll come together. I know so many people bring up the NAACP and the SCLC. Those organizations have been around for a long time. If they were about action and in regards to getting what we're trying to do in terms of economic stability in the black community and empowerment, it would have already been done. So let's focus on this movement, getting it where it needs to be, and as we get to different levels, we can always reach back and say, hey, NAACP, you're good at X, Y, and Z. How can we partner together to get over this next hump and so on? But the movement is started. He's already left the train. You know, as people wake up and understand that this is a must, they will come together either with this one or something locally. But the point of the matter is that we're starting to get smart about this, and we're starting to understand that we have to put our pen to the pad, our hands to the plow, and get stuff done. And that's what's happening. And we all just got to jump on the bandwagon and ride along.
Excellent,
that's
sister.
It.
Yeah, that was that's an excellent summary of what needs to happen. You know, so the sisters, you know, I believe the sister is still on the call. She's still on the call. So, Sister Debbie, one of the things that you know, that I think is really important is for people to at least have have some traction. And then when some of these other organizations come together to collaborate, like the sister said, it's like, okay, cool, you guys accomplished this, we've accomplished this. Hey, either let's work together or let's learn from each other. How did you do that? Here's how we did this. And, you know, share that information like that, and then, you know, put together a great unified front. I think one of the other greatest things is going to be when we're able to have, like, a large national pro-black type conference where all the different organizations come together. Everyone understands that we have one goal. We all work in unity. And then there are some tools and resources available for everyone. And that was essentially the kind of conversation that I was having with the people that I approached, because I was saying, listen, I don't know what your organization needs. You don't know what my organization needs, but I can tell you one thing. I can pretty much guarantee we all need to figure out how to get the money we need to operate these things. And, you know, so I had one guy pretty much shut me down. What, are you crazy? We're good. This you know, you sounding like you're all about the money and da 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 da. And that brother's organization is now defunct. He thought he was going to be able to do this thing on a wing and a prayer. So his website is no longer up, and he's no longer doing anything because it costs money. You know, especially when, like me, I have pretty much set my personal life aside, my personal business and everything, to dedicate to Black Wallets Matter. If I was not in the financial position that I was in, it would be really hard to do this. I mean, you can call me, I'm pretty much available all day for Black Wallets Matter business. If I was not in a financial position that I was in at the onset, I wouldn't have been able to do this because I would have to, you know, I would be at work or, you know, doing something else or whatever. So, you know, I think dealing with financially stable organizations is also going to be really important too, because if you're dealing with another organization and they don't have their resources, their finances, all their things in play, basically they would be taking away the resources from your organization unless you guys had a meeting of the minds and you were able to come to some agreement where you're going to share. So that, you know, that's just something else I wanted to put out there. All right, Sister Shamika, we have Brother Ed. Hold on. Brother Ed, you are live.
How you doing?
Peace, brother, peace.
Peace. How everybody doing?
All right.
First, I want to get some out there. My mother's grandfather was born in Africa, and that's who raised me.
Uh-huh.
And for the last 10 years, I've been selling outdated electronics into Africa. So I've been confused about the African American agendas and all that stuff, because, like you say, a lot of brothers get hostile over differences. Last 10 years, I've been dealing with international commerce with my great grandfather's family that lives in Africa by selling them electronics. So basically, my question is, tomorrow I want to send you a email and talk to you about that, because we transfer a lot of African currency into U.S. currency through the bank, and help you fund this organization and see what we can do based upon the things that you announced so far. I just want to let you know the type of business that I'm into. Like, I got EIN and all that type of stuff, but most of the business that I do is actually in Africa.
All right. So we'll talk, and then we'll figure out how to make it work, brother.
All right. That's about it. All I had.
All right. Cool. Thank you, brother. Now we got Brother Al. Brother Al.
Hello.
Yes, please, brother.
So you said the repo or the listing is official, is Black Wall Street listing. There is an organization or just an online a directory online called official Black Wall Street .com. And so what I was thinking was, you know, just to get more exposure, you can kind of source the companies that are already on there. Just let them know, because with each profile, they have links to the website. The website has the contact info, so that'll be one good way to get the exposure to the people that it needs to be, business owners who are actually already doing this and are motivated to make something happen.
Okay, great, brother Al. All right, I'll have to put that into the notes. All right, sounds good. Anything else you want to contribute? Hello?
Oh no, that was it. On my side, I'll do what I can to get the word out.
All right, thank you. All right, and now we got Brother John G. Brother John.
Hello. I've been thinking about the things you've been talking about for quite some time. I had a little business doing massage therapy, trying to help people, and I've been doing it as a regular business instead of a nonprofit, because I work for a lot of nonprofits, and you always had to put in for grants, and then the grants would always get pulled when you were just about to complete the work. So I think the model that you're talking about should work very well, and instead of just doing things like the Negro College Fund, where people are sent to college, a lot of people get out and can't find jobs, this would be something that started people out working and in businesses in order to empower the whole community, instead of just using this very old model that talks about using the same methodology that white people use in order to progress, which doesn't help and work for black people.
Nope, it doesn't, brother. I'm glad you recognize that. I want one of the things that I wanted to also say. So I want to make a distinction between founding members and then regular members when the association gets up and running at full speed. So the founding. So if any of you guys watch the blueprint, so the organization will be offering perks. So essentially, you will be getting something in exchange for your membership dues. The founding members were the people who came on board. So this organization is 6 months old this month. The founding members were the people who were coming on board and understanding that we have to grow to that point to start adding the perks and start adding some of the things. So they were helping. So the Black Wall Street Project is going to be one of the perks that people will be able to enjoy. If they have a business and they need help with that or whatever. We have some other things lined up too. The problem is those things, they wouldn't be economically feasible until we have like a certain number of members. So anyone on the call, if you're sitting and you're thinking to yourself, well, what do I get or what is this about or whatever it is, if you become a member, you will be getting, you know, perks and benefits or whatever it is in exchange for your membership dues. It's just that right now what we're doing is we're still within our founding member phase. And so those of us who can, they should, and they, you know, we have a lot of people who are. They are doing it. We even have people who don't even have kids, and they're saying, you know what, I just don't want it bad for my nieces and my nephews or whatever. So that's basically the mindset that someone would have to have. And it's like you said, it's not using the old outdated models. We're trying to use current models. We're trying to do transactions. We're trying to give people things in exchange. And it's essentially up to us to be fiduciaries and responsible fiduciaries and do with it or do with the profits what we say we will. I outlined the plan to everyone. It's very ambitious. We have very, very large scale goals. This thing is not designed for any one particular person to get rich. So I have a few people that come on. We've had people in the past they come on and they're like, well, why don't you make it an investment, and why don't you give people shares, and why don't you do this? And I'm like, if we the way that we plan on using the money, if you're in a normal corporation, a normal business, the goal is to maximize profits so that the shareholders can pad their pockets. With the way that this organization is designed to create profits to more or less, you know, invest in future generations of black people, that's not something that an investor, a traditional investor who's looking to build like their own wealth or whatever, that's not something they're going to be happy with. And legally, they could sue you for not moving or not executing according to that plan. So that's why this thing is situated as a B Corp. B corporations are benefit corporations. They take in the money and then they distribute it amongst the people that they said they're going to serve. But the benefit, so as opposed to being like a, so everyone's familiar with 501c3 nonprofits, there's also 501c4s, which help organizations. But the difference between a B Corp and a 501c4 is that we're able to use our profits and imply that money into politics. We don't invest in our politicians the way that some of the other people do. And then we sit on the sidelines, and then we're mad when, you know, policies are made that don't work to our benefit. Whether it's fair or not, money is the way that the game is played. And so we're going to have to start making that investment as well for policies that protect us, policies that benefit us. We're going to have to start playing a politic game. And, you know, I'm not saying that I'm the world, you know, I'm not even saying that I know nearly everything that that requires for politics. So it's definitely our plan to hire people who know what they're doing. But those are the goals. Those are the financial goals of this organization. It's not maximizing profit to distribute to shareholders. It's maximizing profits so that we can invest in the black community, so that there is a business, there is a system in place that is for black people in America. And, you know, that's just what it is.
Yeah, well, I'm glad that I was just thinking about this a few days ago before I saw somebody sent me a link about what you're doing on Facebook, because I was I've always been trying to get to work with black people for massage and meditation, healthcare type issues. But most of the time it's hard to even get a spot in the black community because they're owned by white landlords most of the time.
Right.
And I've actually seen companies like a coffee shop where it started growing, they started having poetry, they started having workshops and everything. It had to close down because the white landlord raised the price so high that the person couldn't keep the coffee shop open. So this is like a daily thing almost in most black communities. And unless we get the power, political and monetary power, this is going to just keep happening, I think. So I'm just wondering if you're going to send a link out to sign up for it.
Well, there you should have gotten a link. You mean to become a member? There should have been.
Yeah, well the way it works, it takes you to the survey, and you have to fill out the survey again to get to the link to join up. You have one that goes to the survey.
And then I explain what the organization is about. And then there's an opportunity to watch the blueprint or to become a member. So sometimes people just watch the video because I basically give an overview of what the organization is about, and then they become members there, or they go and watch the blueprint. Most of the time they just watch the video and then leave, and then I have to send them a follow-up email or something like that.
Okay, well, maybe you can do that and send a follow-up email, or should I just fill the survey out again?
No, brother. You can just go to blackwalletsmatter.org and click the menu button, and on the menu you'll see a link that says become a member, and then you can become a member there. So for anyone on the call who's curious as to how to become a member, you can visit www.blackwalletsmatter.org. And then click the menu button, and then there will be a link that says become a member, and you can sign up. You should actually do that now. All right, thank you. Oh, wait, you know what? When you said to me, a thought occurred to me. I don't know, maybe about, this is probably like the second or third time that I'm hearing someone say that they don't, that they are actually, that they need space to do some of the things that they need. I don't know how you feel about the black churches, right? Because I know there's a lot of backlash about them now, and like I said, we don't want to discuss the politics. I'm not getting into the politics, but they do have buildings, they do have spaces, and they usually my family is heavily in the church, and one of my and so my aunt, she's a first lady, and they have a really, well, it's not super big like the ones you see like in Atlanta or nothing, but it's a big one for New York. And they have a basement where they have a school and have like a conference area. If you have, if the churches are in your area, if they're like that, the black churches, maybe you could talk to them about renting out the rooms or renting out some space. Two things will happen. You actually give the church a way to make an additional revenue stream, and we all know churches are always looking for ways to get some extra money. And then you also can tap into their congregation, and you can explain, because you're talking about holistic healing and things like that. So you can start tapping into spirituality without talking about religion. So
that would depend on the church.
Well, oh, yeah, you got to find
out. Some are against all of that, that's the problem in the black community, and part of the black community anyway.
But
it's hard to get around sometimes.
Well, I'm gonna tell you this. In the blueprint, I talk about we are going to have to use what we have to get get to where we are, right? So we're gonna have to use existing behaviors. Believe it or not, regardless of how people feel, black churches have real estate in the black community. They do. Mm-hmm. My cousin is the head of the Southern Christian Leader Conference in California somewhere. They have a big church. They have a big church. Mm-hmm. The funny thing is he doesn't mess with the other side of the family because I think they're AME and he's – I don't know how that works, but they're different things. But they do have buildings, and they do have spaces, and they do open up things for the kids. So So I'm just letting you know, man, maybe if you can put your religious differences aside and just be like, hey, listen, I'm trying to do something for the community, and you can find a church who says, yeah, we're about the black community too, that might be something to check into. All right? All right, brother. Thank you.
Okay.
All right. So, brothers and sisters, it is 10 o'clock. These calls usually last to 11. We usually have a lot more people on the call. We have a pretty small group tonight. If anyone has any topics that they want to bring to the floor, we can open the floor for open discussion. And if not, then I will go over some of the things that I've been writing some of my notes in regards to combating black poverty, things that we could do now, such as the need for life insurance policies and things like that, the need to create household budgets and working towards that. Hey, Brother Warren, you have something you want to say? Yes, Brother Warren.
Yes, brother. My question was, do we plan or is there any type of business as far as working with black banks?
I'm sorry, say that again. Is there what?
Any plan or any type of vision that this organization will be working with black banks?
I have not looked into it. I have looked at United One. I just looked at it as, a promotion came through my feed or whatever, and I just looked at it like that. But I did not set any real goal or any real good, any mission. Because, so in New York, they have Carver Bank, which has been one of the good black banks back in the days, I remember. And they have fallen on hard times because what they used to do is they used to give loans to predominantly black folks for their business and for their homes. And they have fallen on hard times because a lot of people have defaulted. And a lot of that, part of that is from the economy, and then the other part of that is from, just mismanagement of the business and things like that. So aside from that, I haven't really looked at it because
even if we do put the money back in the black banks, I think it's very unrealistic to believe that they're going to be giving money back out to the black community. You know, and this may offend some people, but realistically, I don't think the black community is ready for an investment that requires repayment. Because a lot of people have problems getting money for their business, and they think it's because they're black, but it's not. It's because they don't have their paperwork in order. They don't have their collateral lined up. You know, it's all these different factors. So, like I said, Carver Bank, they were making good faith loans back in the days in New York, a lot of them, and they have fallen on hard times because that's what happened. So if we were to put money into a black bank and banks are about making money, they would take our black dollars and they would have to go and give it to places where they're going to get a return on their money, and that may mean in white communities or Asian communities or whatever else. So.
Okay.
All right.
That makes sense. Yeah.
All right.
Yep.
Thank you. And that's actually a good topic. So another brother called me today, Brother Morris. So he called me and he's trying to start. Well, he's already started it because he's buying the materials. He's starting. A subscription box. A subscription box for young men who are at risk that pretty much teaches them to become men or help them with in manhood. If I'm not mistaken, I think that's the brother. But I know he called me earlier today and he said he brought some black-owned products. And when he opened up the products, they said made by China on them. And he was like, yo, what's up with that? And I explained to him, I said, brother, you know, the reality of it is we're not strong in manufacturing yet. So we are going to have to use whatever kind of resources or we're going to have to use whatever kind of network it is. Like the sister said, you know, we're going to have to learn to work amongst other groups of people or whatever it is, because realistically, we can't stand on our own right now. So if someone let's say if someone wants like toothpaste or sleeping bags or, you know, something, kerosene lamps, where are we going to buy that from black folks? I don't know any black folks that make that stuff. Maybe they are. Maybe they're out there, but I don't know. I don't know where they are. And then if they are, they aren't out there, like they aren't visible. So we would have to work with other ethnic groups to get those things. You know, other things, one of the major things, utilities. Let's say we decide we want to go get like our own plot of land somewhere, I don't know where it would be, and we're like, nah, we want to be totally self-sufficient and not rely on nobody else. Well, how are we going to get our utilities? Light, gas, running water, things like that. How are we going to do that? So, you know, I think it's a little unrealistic to say that we're going to totally cut ourselves off. I just think that it's important that we say that we are going to start working in our best interests. And that's what this organization is about. This is not a racist, radical, militant organization. We are, like I said at the onset, I am dead serious about making this thing happen. And so that means we have to be very realistic. And what is realistic is that there are laws that are on the books so we can stop these cops from going upside these kids' head. We have $1.3 to $1.6 trillion flowing through our hands. Whether we deal with that money responsibly or not, it runs through our hands. So we definitely have the money to implement the system for the babies, because that's really going to be our hope, the babies, and we have the money to protect them. So we just got to figure out a way to get it out of the hands of the 1.6. So if people like going to the club, turning up and doing all this other kind of stuff like that, instead of actually making these types of investments, who knows, brother, maybe we need to start a wine and spirits company. Maybe we need to start a string of bar and grills. You know, I mean, I don't know. But we're going to have to figure it out because I'm dead serious about this. All right? We have a few more people in the queue now. You have anything you want to add, brother?
No.
All right. Thank you. Yeah, okay, cool. Brother Ed, you are live. Sister Shamika, I see you. Go ahead, brother. Hello? Brother Ed. Oh, shoot. Sorry, brother. I muted you. Well, I think you muted yourself back.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Oh, brother, you're muting yourself. I can't unmute you. I don't know. Brother, you muted yourself. I'm going to let Sister Shamika come on, and you're going to have to figure out how to unmute yourself. What's going on? Sister Shamika?
Hey, I was going to piggyback off of what you said about what we have to do to bar and grills, and I was going to say, yes, I absolutely concur. Somebody mentioned Dr. Claude Anderson earlier. It's still going down. His model, his blueprint is that we have to own an industry where we dominate in spending patterns. So, yes, if you're talking about the clubs or whatever, he mentioned seafood, he mentioned leather, and he mentioned black hair care. And, you know, you still got the manufacturing issues or whatever, but it's happening. You have so many different black companies in terms of hair care, especially when it comes to the natural hair. So, yes, we do have to start cornering the market. So we can't totally become self-sufficient in terms of, you know, electricity, water, all of those things. We are fully integrated into the systems that have been put in place in this country. Wow. But we do have to take that $1.3 trillion, move it back into our community so that we can benefit from it, and then figure out what industries can we dominate in. Because, hell, at the end of the day, honestly, and I've been thinking about this more and more, entertainment, that's our culture. And like Jay-Z say, we give it away. We have to figure out how to pull that back into our community and profit from it, because they want it. They're coming after it all day, every day. In Atlanta, there's a restaurant my girlfriend was about to take me to, and she was like, you know, I thought it was black-owned. She told me it was black-owned, so I'm thinking I'm walking into it, it's black-owned. They have black bouncers, black servers, black DJ, black bartenders, everything, and every customer in there was black. I mean, they was bouncing from side to side. Every seat in the house was taken, y'all. And the kick of all of this was it was a Mexican restaurant.
And what? It was just black night? They were just having a black night?
No. The Mexican restaurant makes good food, and they give good music. They put the music in there that we like. They put black bouncers in there, bartenders and servers. They're just cooking the food, y'all. The whole restaurant, I thought it was a black restaurant, and they have benefited so much that they have two restaurants on the same street. Give away our culture, our stuff. We got to go back and look at these places and see, like, why in the world is that not black owned? We can make some darn guacamole and beans and rice and stuff.
I'm going to tell you why. It's because we don't make investments, because investing is not part of our culture. And it needs to be. And what has to happen is this organization needs to amass a large amount of money. I was telling a brother this the other day. What has to happen, right, because black folks are skittish when it comes to their money. We hate taking losses. So when we go and we buy stuff, we know that we're not taking a loss on the money. I gave you $20. You gave me, you know, two shots. So you gave me this. I got my value for my money. So what the organization is going to have to do, which is another reason why we need memberships, we're going to have to go and make some investments in businesses. So you were saying the hair care. We discussed that. I want to say about three town halls back, right? But one of the biggest ones that takes I would say about 30% of the money out of our community are these corner stores, those bodegas. Yeah. They take the vast majority, because that's the pure cash. We have a lot of cash, and they're taking straight cash. So what the organization will have to do is we will have to go and we will have to open up pilot stores. We will have to figure out how to, because our people don't really know how to run stores. They don't want to work in there. They're not going to work 24 hours like the Arabs and all that crazy stuff. So what we have to do is open up some pilot stores, find out exactly how to run these corner stores. Then what we do, all right, and it's gonna, and we may have to take a loss until we figure things out or whatever it is. Then what we do is we offer that as a franchise business opportunity to other black folks. And now it's like, here's where all the kinks, we worked out all the kinks for you. Here's how we reclaim the community, and here how you make money. And, you know, the organization may have to take a partnership role with that family or with that person or whatever it is. And that's how we can go about systematically reclaiming different things. So then the other thing, like you said, running restaurants, you have to set it up. Go in there. So I'm actually a partner in a bar and grill too, right? But the partner, he does pretty much all the other stuff. But we would have to go and set up the bar and grill and all the whole thing, work out the kinks, figure out what the numbers are, and then go and present that to some black folks and say, this is how you take your $10,000, $20,000, $35,000 is, you know, you get a group of 5, 6, 10 of y'all, and here's how that money works out and how you break it down. Somebody has to take us by the hand and show us exactly, full disclosure, all the numbers. Here's how you take small amounts of money, you put it together with some other people, here's how you formulate the partnerships, here's how you do all of this, and here's what you can expect your money to come back, and here's how you do that. Boom, 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 boom.
And that's, Brother Lou, that's yes. what we're doing here in Atlanta. That's why we can partner with you, because I know your goal right now is raising money and handling the politics and getting the police off of our back. We're trying to have a physical economic center, which is basically a plaza here in Atlanta where we can start reclaiming the community. So I told you, I sent you our email now. My husband and I have Chef Law's Fish Fry. When we open our number 2, it will be in the plaza. We're going to think about, yes, that community store, because most of the places, most of the other cultures that I see when they start their community, and I've seen them start it from ground floor, ground zero here, the first thing that they set up is their grocery store or their fresh food mart, and then they start building all of the different things that they need to sustain themselves on a daily, weekly basis in their community. So if we're going to cleaners every week, if we're going to, like you said, the bodegas every week, wherever we're spending the bulk of our money, we need to create black-owned establishments within that plaza so that we can do it. So we want to focus on the businesses that matter to us most, because I don't know if you all have heard about Bankhead Highway here in Atlanta. It is one of Bankhead and Buckhead are the two popular places, but Bankhead is the black area. You can drive that whole stretch of Bankhead, and there's no grocery stores along that stretch. So black people in Atlanta, Bankhead has no place to go to get fresh food. So it's a plaza that used to have a grocery store that shut down. It cost $1.6 million. That's where our focus is on how to get that. That's 80,000 people giving $20. That's very small, in my opinion. But that's work that we have to do to get there. But that's what we're working on, and that's what I'm saying. We're partnering with you because we want a physical plaza where we can start making that happen. Because if anything was to happen, you think about martial law and all of these things, because of all of the fighting and the killing that's going on, black people can then get starved in Atlanta. They don't have nowhere to go. And we got to change that. We have to start creating the businesses and the things that we need to survive and sustain ourselves. So
absolutely, sister. Yep. Hey, sister, remember, I responded back to your email, so we'll talk behind the scenes, okay?
Yeah, thank you.
Yep. Brother Socrates. Brother?
Brother Lou, how are you?
Peace, brother, with that cool name, the philosopher.
Well,
tell us about it.
I took a lot of years and a lot of hard work behind that name, Lou. I'm here in Jackson, Mississippi. So you guys know that I'm in a barren land trying to make something grow. But I'm working real hard at it, been doing it for a long time. And we started an organization called the Business and Ministerial Alliance because we fundamentally believe that the problem is between the black elected official and the black business community. Uh-huh. And so we're working hard to try and make some impasse, get some gains in terms of getting contractual opportunities, you know, from that model. We believe in the model that Maynard Jackson put in place over in Atlanta and that every black mayor in this country ought to be following. And so, you know, I support the movement wholeheartedly. We're working at it from a different angle. But, you know, I just wanted to say that, you know, I support you. I talked about it on my radio show Tuesday night, talked about it on my YouTube channel, Socrates Speaks, Tuesday night. And we're going to support and be a part of the organization. Just want to encourage everybody. You know, I've been in this fight a long time, and want to encourage everybody that it's doable. So thank you for what we're doing.
Thank you. Thank you for the vote of confidence and for the exposure and again, like I said, when we spoke, you know, it's just a matter of networking. It's a matter of finding the meeting of the minds. And, you know, one of the other things, too, it's like quid pro quo, right? So you gotta give a little to get a little. I think realistically, like with the organization, right? So you gotta have resources. So let's say, so you become part of this organization, and this organization has your back and supports your organization or whatever, right? Let's say if you had you created one of those metal buildings, like a community center or whatever it was, and then you started providing bingo or whatever it is for the elderly, you started providing a place for the youth, and you know, you started having classes for people who want to learn some of this other stuff, right? You basically would now start having the ear of the local people, of the local constituency. Now when you go and you approach these politicians and you're like, listen, my man, this is what we want, and here's what I can deliver. We have votes in like the fifth ward or section, whatever, you know, however, you know how they break these cities down. If you're able to go and communicate something like that to the politicians, you would definitely have their ear. And so that's like also in the plans for this organization. But again, billions and billions of dollars. Billions of dollars. But if we, like, let's say if you were able to go and I know that Jackson has a large black population, and I know some of the things you guys are dealing with down there, because I know these other organizations, these groups of guys, they're trying to they basically tried to stop like some crime stuff going on. I think they tried to self police, if I'm not mistaken. But they ran out of funds. So that's just something that I just know about Jackson. So
right. But do a little research, Lou. You think you're real good at that. Statistically speaking, if there's $1.4 trillion that we spend in our communities, do a little research on how many dollars that our African-American inner cities spend in terms of the dollars that they collect from our citizens that are predominantly African-American. Jackson is 85% black. And, you know, the economics of that local community and our school boards and our airports and our counties and our cities, you'd be talking about an astronomical number of dollars that are passing right through our hands in our communities, and we don't seem to be benefiting from it.
Absolutely, absolutely. All right, thank you so much, brother. I appreciate your call.
Yep. All right, appreciate it. Bye-bye.
Brother Ed, you are back.
Hey, how you doing, Brother Lou? Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
All right, you're talking about electric. Have you ever heard of ambient energy?
Yes, I have, brother.
What do you think about that energy company?
Well, it's not black owned, so it's a network marketing opportunity. So, I mean, that's all that I know about it.
Is it something
they're buying, and they're, if I'm not mistaken, they're buying energy wholesale and then selling it and reselling it?
Is that something that you think might could benefit?
Could benefit who? The organization?
Yeah, in terms of electricity, because how would the black community get hold of electricity company?
Well, bro, that's not the plan for this. Or I just brought that up as like some of the things that people say that we need to totally separate and segregate and go into our own plots of land. I was just saying that we're not ready for that yet. So, it's not the goal of this organization to worry about an electric company or this. It's pretty much like Sister Shamika said, which was we just need to get a foothold on the things that we actually do control. Like, I mean, some of the things that we do. So our genius is entertainment. Our genius is sports. Our genius is just adding like little stank on everything. Like everything we do, it just got some flavor, it got some, right? But our weakness is that we don't invest in ourselves, we don't control the entities, we have the vision for how to create stuff, we don't have the vision for how to keep it and pass it on and, you know, grow it into other bigger things. And that requires a different part of the brain. It's like the process is part of the brain. And you know, we realistically speaking, I believe that's something that would have to be taught to the children. So in our households, there needs to become an emphasis on like math and the sciences. It's kind of hard to emphasize that as a parent if that's not where you're strong at. You know, our, you know, when I was growing up, it was okay to be like, oh, math, no, I hate math. Like, that's like something that you heard. Oh, no, I'm not good with math or whatever. If you go in, like, Asian households and Indian households, they literally beat their kids, cane their kids to excel in mathematics and sciences and things like that. And if you pay attention, those are the things that actually make the world go around. So
right.
So we can start re-engineering. Like, I emphasize mathematics, sciences, things like that. I emphasize that in my household. And I speak, you know, with my children about using their abilities and their talents, and I'm like, well, how could you take it further? You know, how could you control it? How could you, you know, turn it into a business? Those are the things that I emphasize in my household. And so I think until we start looking at that and start making a greater impact as a whole, I don't think we need to be worrying about how we're going to go take over like energy and utility companies and things like that. It's not even necessary right now.
Okay, you know, like I said, I was working with on the 2017 summit, because AECOM, he went over to Africa and they was putting electricity and they dealing with a whole lot of solar energy projects and stuff like that. So I just was asking a question.
Ambit Energy did that?
No, actually, AECOM went and spent his own money.
I was about to say, I know AECOM did it. I ain't know Ambit did that. Okay.
He went to spend his own money, and we joined his campaign.
Okay.
To help put some electricity out inside of Africa. But I was asking you, have you ever heard of Ambit Energy? And I was just trying to get your opinion on it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's it.
All right, thank you so much, brother.
You're welcome.
Okay, and so that is that was the last question in the queue. If no one else has anything that they want to bring to the floor, we can either we can close out the meeting, this town hall, which would be a first, or we can, like I said, the last thing that I wanted to talk about was the rudiments of wealth, and you know, trying to figure out exactly, because the bottom line is this: until we're like financially comfortable, we're not gonna be able to really like do anything, and that's one of the major problems. So most of us grew up where money was tight. if we've been fortunate enough to make some money or get to a place where we have a few dollars to spend, what happens is we spend our money on the things that we've always wanted. Wait a minute. I think I just hung up on somebody. We spend our money on the things that we always wanted and not necessarily on the things that we need for the future. And I think, like, we need to, like, figure out, like, some basic plans, some basic steps. I study the Jewish community a lot because they are the most successful. They are the most financially successful people on the planet, believe it or not. And they have life insurance immediately. They insure everybody, especially all the old kids. I mean, all the old people, they insure them, right? And they're like, that's just free money. That's how they look at it. That's money coming back. Like in New York, they milk the system. So the husband, he will own like tons and tons of buildings. The buildings will be, he'll probably have like a $50 million portfolio. And the wife will still be collecting welfare. Now, I'm not saying that's like we need to be, you know, do anything illegal or stuff like that. But I think we really need to like figure out like a base financial model that will still allow us to enjoy some of the fruits of our labor currently, but also allow us to make those future investments or whatever it is. And if anyone is on the call, well, I see Sister Shamika is in the call, but I just want to put this out there. If anyone who has been contemplating some type of investment but haven't really pulled the trigger because they have some type of trepidation or whatever it is, you know, please jump on the call right now. Let's discuss this. You know, maybe there's something that I know that could, you know, help you, or, you know, maybe someone in the group can say something that would help you, you know, make you understand the investment a little bit better. Because the bottom line is that we all should be planning for our future, and we all should be at least trying to be thinking about leaving a legacy. I'm going to get to Sister Shamika now. If you have anything to say in regards to that, press star 6. Peace, sister.
So I wanted to ask the question, like, you know, with everything that we've talked about tonight, the issues, the challenges, the things that we need to do to change the trajectory of Black America, like, what would keep anyone on the call from proceeding? So, yeah, like Brother Lou said, let's talk about that. Because at the end of the day, if you look at it, don't look at us individually. You got to look at us collectively as a race. And don't just think about us where you live and your surroundings. Think about us globally. Globally in the marketplace, y'all. Collectively as a race, we are 100% employees and 100% consumers. We don't own or control anything. There's not one industry that you can name that Blacks dominate in. You can say media, but we don't own media. That's the Jews. Even if you look at Oprah and Tyler Perry, they're still employees. They make billions and millions of dollars, but they're still employees because they have to go through another company for their shows to hit the airwaves. So they're owners, but in the grand scheme of things, because they don't own the media industry, they're still employees. So you got Asians, like she said, technology, the automobile industry. They even got their Asian restaurants, you know? And then you have, you know, Mexicans, they're dominating in, let's go back to the Asians. They don't want own Black hair care. We don't own
it. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So we don't own anything. But yet we dominate these industries. The hair care industry is billions of dollars. I don't even know the figure to even quote.
I think we looked at it. I think the time when we had the call, I think it was $700 billion. So it was something stupid. It was something stupid. I'm sorry. $700 million.
Okay.
But I think it's bigger than that.
But yeah, it's billions. That is
billion-dollar
industry. And do you all know that every time we reach heights like Shea Butter, I don't know if y'all missed, they had a commercial earlier this year that they started showing white women in the commercial. And all of the sisters got mad, and they had to go back and start saying, well, I'm sorry, we had more diversity here. They was like, the sisters was like, look, you better recognize who built y'all's brand and recognize who your patrons are. So anyway,
did they stop patronizing the brand? Probably not.
Probably not, because you're like, damn, I don't want to spend money with them, but it works the best, you know, that type of thing. And you're right, we will keep on doing some stuff.
Yeah.
So just saying that to say that as a race, we are in a bad position. A bad position. 100% employees, 100% consumers. That means we spend money with every other race except for our own, because we don't have the businesses to allow us to come shop with us. There are no black grocery stores. I can't say no more, because Compton has a black grocery store now. She bought a franchise.
That's what I was about to say. She bought a franchise from an Asian. So it's just,
right.
I mean, so I don't know how you want to call that.
Right. That's why I said it's a franchise. So until we own it free and clear, you stuff can happen. You know what I'm saying? So then I heard Louisiana got ex-football player or something. I think he has something out in Louisiana. So at the end of the day, what if they decide to stop employing us?
Yeah. I mean,
We're back. You know what I'm saying? That's slavery. Because you can only feed your family four ways. If you hunt, and we don't hunt anymore. If you have a job, if they take that away, or if you're going to kill for it, or welfare. So that puts us back. So we have to do things now to put ourselves in a position of ownership, and we have to do it quick. Because Dr. Claude Anderson, who we've been talking about all night, and I know I didn't mention him three times, he wrote his book back in the 90s. And he's had a plan for Black America to rebuild real communities. And in his foreword of that book, he said he would have wanted us to do that by 2005. And it is 2017, and that still does not exist. There are no Black communities around this country. And to be a Black, to be a community, you have to have an economic system. You got to have people in office that support you, and you have to have a code of conduct. And y'all know that does not exist. So there are things that we have to do. And the only thing that we can do is start to come together and pool our money, take that $1.3 trillion and utilize it differently so that we can create ownership in our communities. And so with Black Wallets Matter, we are supposed to come together, pool our resources so that we can raise the money that we need to start our ownership and getting people in office that can support us. So that's why I said we're down here in Atlanta. We're working on our physical economic center here, where we have restaurants that we want to support, that we have grocery stores or fresh food markets that we want to support, cleaners and whatever else we can come up with. Because Dr. Claude say we have less than 3 years, and if we don't do that, we're going to become a permanent subclass. So everybody was talking about legacy. This is our opportunity to leave a different legacy to our kids, and without putting them back in a position where they could be in slavery. So that's my spiel. I hope that y'all support Brother Lou. We're supporting them down here, and I'm telling everybody else too.
Thank you so much, sister. Thank you so much. We have a caller from 619. I didn't get your first name, caller.
Oh, hello. Can you hear me well?
Yes, I can, sister. What is your first name?
My name is Renita, and I'm calling out of San Diego.
I'm sorry?
I said my name is Renita, and I'm calling out of San Diego.
Okay, hold on. Let me... Okay, sister. Okay, so what would you like to say? speak on?
Well, this is, excuse me if this has already been spoken on. I kind of just came onto the call about 20 minutes ago. I have issues with helping my 7-year-old have more of a business mind. I kind of want to be independent. She's kind of in the mindset of growing up to work for someone else. And I'm wondering, how do you encourage a child to be more willing to have their own business and to help support a family business?
Well, I don't know how you run your household, but I don't like bad little kids. I don't like disrespectful little kids, so I have never played that with my kids. I knew when my kids started talking, I want to say. So my son is 11 and my daughter is 9. When they started talking, we never did the Google Gaga stuff to them. We read books to them. We read adult books to them. And then when they were able to, when they start grabbing pencils and doodling and things like that, we immediately started, having them write their alphabets and their names. And as soon as they went to school and were able to count that 1, 2, 3, blah, 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 I sat down and taught them math using stick figures. It's just always been, I just knew from the onset that I wasn't going to play any games with these children. So you're saying she's 7. If it's a problem where you tell her you come home from school, like my kids, they know they come home from school. First of all, there's no TV, video games, or any of that stuff during the week. So they know, come home, do your homework. And then afterwards, I give my kids, they have worksheets, math worksheets. They're in the 6th and she's 5th. He's going to the 6th grade. They're doing like, 5, and they're multiplying 5 and 6 digits. I give them like business type problems to solve. I taught them the difference between revenue and expenses and profit. I just always implemented that. So I guess you could start it out as a game, maybe. So maybe you can go with her where her play area is, and then like start setting things up and then start working. I don't know how strong she is with math, but you can start doing that, and then maybe start working with like some quarters and change and things like that. That's like the best that I can tell you. I just always been doing it. So I don't know where your child is starting. I have just always been doing it with my children.
Okay. That's good advice.
Do you have a family business?
I had to. I just recently folded one. I personally, my plan was for everyone that is in my immediate family to have their own business, and it would be catered to their own personal preferences. My 7-year-old 2 years ago asked to start her own business, and I thought that was grand, but when I actually started it, which is Nanu's Bow Collection, she was all about her business and all about making her money. But then when she started going to school, like, first grade, now she's in second grade, she doesn't really care about the business anymore. So
really?
I've had a hard time with support with the family to encourage her and to help her stay excited about Nanu's Bow Collection. I am a face painter, and business for me hasn't been very well lately. Usually the summertime is a good season for face painters, but it's very competitive out here.
Okay.
So there's...
At parties and stuff like that, right?
Parties, fairs, weddings, christenings, any kind of event where there are going to be a bunch of kids that you want them to be entertained. Most people want things for free.
Really?
Yeah, they think face painting. I think people look at face painting as a hobby, but it's a very expensive profession. So I have my ratings as they are. But a lot of people, especially a lot of black people, don't want to pay for it. I just did a black event, and I got the dirtiest attitudes from my brothers and sisters for having to pay for a design. So I'm kind of lost as to, I need to change my strategy. I don't know what I need to do, but I think I need to change my strategy, my marketing. I cannot change my prices. What I was really worried about is are my children, and how can I get them to be excited to be business owners? Because right now, my 7-year-old is only excited about going outside to play.
Well, at least she's doing that, because you know most kids they want to stay in the house and play video games. I was going to say you could go and try to set up like a icy stand, icy and waters. So I had an icy cart some years ago, and I manned it myself for the first 2 years. Then my little brother, he needed something to do, and then he became the icy man. And then my little cousin, he became the icy man. And then I had my son and my daughter out there, and they became the icy guy and girl, right? The icy boy and girl. That, I don't know what you're willing to invest in that, but that would actually be cool. So you know, if you're able to get the cart, you said you're in San Diego, right?
Yes.
So the weather is beautiful all year round, but I know it can get a little nippy, so I don't know how well the icy thing would probably go over, but I'm sure something would work. You probably would have to make the investment, and then if your kids are excited about going outside, you basically would have them setting up that business for the sake of what it is. It could also be balloons like those, so you could probably get some balloons from, import them from China or wherever it is, buy some balloons wholesale, teach your kids that, and then you guys can go out and sell balloons, and now you basically have starting inventory, and all the kids know, you make it fun, and you're like, okay, cool, we start off, we have how many, we have 4 dozens, how many balloons come in a dozen? 12! Okay, so we have 4 of that, how many is that? And then you know, if they have to get their pen and the paper, and then you say, and this is what the money makes, and then we can get ice cream, yay! And then they go out, and then they sell their balloons, or whatever. Like, so that's how I did it with my kids with the icy. So you have to make that investment in your children if that's really what you want. And I would, you know, I would say everyone should do something like that. I mean, I do it. I live and die by it. And actually, the other day, I was running around looking for an intermediate type approach to dealing with personal finances with my kids. Like, I don't want to overwhelm them with like my bills right now, because they'll look at that and be like, wait a minute, that's crazy. But you know, something a little bit more manageable, and I wanted more or less correlated with their chores and things like that. So you sound like a very smart sister. I'm sure you can figure something out. You have YouTube, you got Google, and you can pretty much take that little you know, that the little things that I shared with you just now.
I have another question. Are there local
chapters? No, they are not local chapters. So we've been discussing that on the past few town halls in terms of the ambassadorship program. There's a sister, she was on vacation all summer, and she hit me up, and she said she's back, and she is the one who's going to be pretty much dealing with the ambassadorship program.
Okay.
But my take on it realistically is, you know, we set up these satellite branches. They need to be doing something. They need to be doing something that's actually contributing to their local communities, and they need to be funded. They need to be sustaining themselves, and so that's something that, you know, a few people probably haven't taken into consideration. So you have a local meeting, you guys get together, and you have a discussion like this, and then it's like, okay, cool, what happens after that? Because the bottom line is, it's going to take money no matter what happens. So that's really what, you know, that's how I'm thinking about it. And local chapters, if you look at like some existing organizations, That never really has worked for us. This organization is set up to be a distributed organization because it's not really meant to be like a group of people, like, you know, it's just really not meant to be like a group of people. It's meant to just implement a system. Because if you look at our oppression, right, I mean, aside from the people that I meet in Washington, they get together, they make these policies. But if you look at the way how it's executed, it's the system just exists. It's just wherever you go, you're bound to face some type of oppression. You're bound to face some type of injustice. Not all the times, but it's just built into the system. And so the countermeasures need to just be built into the system. So anytime any one of us suffer injustice anywhere in this country, we need to have an advocate, and it's this organization. This organization will provide for that. Not down the, you know. Don't get me wrong. I'm not talking about defending people on charges like they selling drugs or something, and then we're providing lawyers for them. I'm saying like someone whose civil rights is being violated, something like that Alton Sterling type thing, where the guy is at the store, he's already laying on the ground, and the cop, and he already dug in his pockets, and from what I can see from the video, cop just shot him in the chest. They're already on the ground. That was just crazy right there. They just killed that dude and some of the other incidences. So that's what I mean. Okay. All right, sister?
I have another question.
Shoot.
I've done some very light research about gold and saving gold. What is your advice about that?
Okay, so this is something that's going to be in the Black Wall Street Project, but I will give you an excerpt. So the overall goal for all of us should be in terms of, like, when we retire, right? So we're not going to physically be able to work or anything, so we need to, and I don't know what Social Security is going to look like, right, because they're trying to pull the money from that. Our goal needs to be like a lifetime passive income. If we were to invest in some type of mutual fund, some type of bond or whatever it is, realistically, we could expect about 5% a year interest. As an inflationary hedge, we probably would need about 7%. But that's parking some money somewhere safe, not working from it, and making money from interest. That could be businesses, that could be whatever it is, but businesses are not really that passive. It requires headaches. So the goal should be trying to save towards a lump sum of money that's going to be able to sustain you for retirement. So you need to like work backwards. You need to say to yourself, well, how much money is it that you want to make? So let me hold on. Let me get my notes because I have them here. All right. So this is, let's say if you wanted to make $10,000 a month. Right, so your idea is $10,000 free and clear a month when you retire. Your current lifestyle, let's say if your current lifestyle is $10,000 a month, or you want your current lifestyle to be $10,000 a month and you want to be able to sustain it into retirement, you need $10,000 plus you need about another $4,000 or so for taxes, insurance, and other kind of incidental. So that means you need $14,000 a month. Now you have to divide that by 60% because that's going to give you what you would have to earn to pay back to the government, and, you know, add in all these other different types of taxes, and that's at a high rate, right? So you really need like about $23,000. You would need where's my numbers? You would need somewhere in the area like about $6 million. Socked away somewhere, saved somewhere, that's going to give you like that kind of money every month. So that's what your goal is by the time you get like 65. Now, that can come from a combination of businesses, that can come from a combination of real estate investment, and that can come from a combination of cash. And so it's just a matter for you to take where you are now and to work backwards and say, okay, cool, you know what, I need this amount of money. So you're saying you're face painting now. I don't know how much money you make, but if you're not making $10,000 a month, you should be setting some money aside and then looking to invest in some type of business or something that's going to increase your income. Once your income is increased from there, you need to be looking. You say, okay, cool, how can I leverage into a larger asset that could either be buying an existing business or buying into real estate? So I'm an advocate of buying into a business, because a business is going to, especially if it's an existing business, most likely the ROI is going to be higher than what you can get from real estate. It's going to be higher than what you can get from just doing some type of passive investing. So let's say you buy a larger business. Let's say you buy a cleaners, a car dealership, or something like that, and it's bringing you in $20,000-$30,000 or whatever it is bringing you a month. Now you're able to start setting aside, 20%, 30%, 40% every single month of the income that you take in, and that will help you get closer to your $6 million goal. Now, at the when you get close to retirement, you can sell the business, you can sell your real estate holdings or whatever, and that will give you that $6 million lump sum. And realistically speaking, it's not that hard. It's definitely doable. So, in summary, you lived a $10,000 a month lifestyle, and I'm telling you, you can live really good on $10,000 a month. You save, you put money away towards your savings for your retirement, and you built a business, and you have real estate holdings. That's the greatest suggestion. So for you right now, I would start looking to save as much as you possibly can so that you can either buy a larger business, something that's going to bring in more revenue, or try to look for some type of business investment, right? Not a passive investment. Real estate, you're probably going to get 7 to about 10% a year return, but a business, you could easily make 1,000% return. You could make anything. So I would look for making that type of investment right now, saving towards that.
Do you know anything about PSP?
PSP?
TSP, Tango Sierra Papa TSP. It's a thrift savings plan, that's what it's called.
No, I've never heard of TSP, no.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you, sister. Okay, brothers and sisters, that concludes this evening's town hall meeting. For any new guest on the call, we want to invite you to leave. We want to invite you to become a member. If you are not yet a member, you can become a member at the $10 level, which is silver, $25 at the gold, or $50 at the platinum. Other than that, if you want to give us some feedback about this town hall meeting, and is this something that you think you want to attend again, you can press *6 and give us some quick feedback. We have about 4 minutes left. And if not, then we will just say goodnight, and you guys can have a blessed evening. So press *6 if you want to leave feedback, and if not, then hopefully we will see you guys next week. Okay. No one has feedback. Everyone have a good night.
Good night, Brother Lou.
Good night.
Good night, Brother Lou.
Peace. Good night.
Good night, Brother Lou.
Good night.